I love those dear hearts and gentle people who live in my hometown, because those dear hearts and gentle people will never ever let you down. They read the good book from Friday till Monday. That's how the weekend goes. I've got a dream house I'll build there one day, with picket fence and rambling rose. I feel so welcome each time that I return, that my happy heart keeps laughing like a clown. I love the dear hearts and gentle people who live and love in my hometown.
Bing Crosby was one of the most popular singers of the 20th century, and he was also a big box office at the movies for close to four decades. Many of his films won Oscars, and not just for their songs. Bing was hailed for his work in serious roles as well as the comedies and musicals, and he won an Academy Award for Best Actor in 1944 for his role as Father Chuck O'Malley in Going My Way. All of that will be on display starting tomorrow through Tuesday the 26th, when the Film Society of Lincoln Center presents the first retrospective in the United States of 14 of his films. And with me now to discuss his life on the screen and off are two people who knew him well, his widow, Catherine Crosby, and Crosby historian Martin McQuaid. Hi.
Hello.
I was kind of stunned to realize that nobody's ever put together a retrospective until now, considering how long and varied his career was. Has anybody ever approached you about this before, Catherine?
Well, yes, in the early years particularly. But I was a bit in shock after he died, and I couldn't look at anything else. And, of course, if you're going to have a retrospective, Lincoln Center's the place to do it.
Absolutely.
That covers the world. The other outlanding places, they don't really matter as much. But if you were at the Lincoln Center, you're there. You're home.
Martin, compared to other actors of his time, just how successful was Bing?
I don't think there was anybody more successful than Bing. He was number one box office for 5 years in a row from 1944 to 48, and he was in the top 10 for 15 years. And the Quigley Publications, which would issue every year the Motion Picture Herald box office poll, recently calculated that Bing is the fourth most popular movie star of all time.
Not bad for a guy who studied law at Gonzaga University.
Not at all.
Had he ever talked about law, or was that something that was just a youthful indiscretion?
Well, that was the result of being brought up two blocks from Gonzaga University. In fact, he got his first punishment by putting a baseball uniform on St. Francis in the church, because they had a big game coming up, and he needed that. He loved learning, and to be a lawyer was the most respectable thing, but he spent an awful lot of time at the theater backstage as a gopher. He got to see Al Jolson and some of his childhood idols there, and then he got in a little band, and they played for high school things and then for countywide things. And then he and a friend got in a car and drove toward Hollywood, and they made it to the outskirts, where they had to call the boy's sister, who got them out of trouble and got him a job. Within a week, they were working.
And most of the early work was kind of peripherally jazz, wasn't it?
Always jazz. Always. What, in fact, they created some wonderful sounds. The Rhythm Boys did Mississippi Mud, and they did it very well. He had his one flop, I think, at the Paramount, because they didn't have microphones then, and they weren't very loud, so people weren't really listening. And he was horrified, and so was Paul Whiteman, who sent him off on another kind of tour.
Well, he wound up singing with people like Bix Beiderbecke and
yeah.
Frankie Trumbauer. And years later, he insisted on putting Louis Armstrong in a film.
Always got him star billing.
And that was a breakthrough for Louis, wasn't it? Because up until then he'd been in films, but not a star and not given that kind of respect.
You know, I don't think that either Bing or Louis thought of that. Louis was glad to be singing with Bing. Bing was thrilled to be working with Louis.
Pennies from Heaven.
Yeah. And those things just happened because they were right. Bing never wanted to be a star alone above the title. He wanted all the friends and support he could get. And I guess his movies have that kind of effect. He worked very graciously with people.
Well, not just movies. He also was one of the biggest radio stars in America. So he had a multi-pronged career, sold a million records, had a long-running radio show, and this incredible movie career.
The public never tired of him, and he was dominant in all media at the same time. It's unparalleled. You can't imagine it happening today.
He wound up actually being credited with moving the radio networks to tape shows.
That's very true. He took a big gamble in 1946. He thought that audiences would not be adverse to hearing a taped show, and he caused a revolution by being the first performer to broadcast on tape in 1948.
Now, Catherine, is that because he had a tendency when things went wrong to use expletives that couldn't
be deleted? No, it was because he was lazy. His favorite song from Irving Berlin is Lazy. I want to retire to the wild, tangled wildwood, singing songs that I sang in my childhood, with a great big valise full of books to read where it's peaceful, and I'm spending time being lazy. They had to do a show, a radio show for the East Coast, and then 3 hours later repeat the same show at the West Coast, and everyone was tethered like an astronaut to the radio station. And Bing thought that would be bad. He thought Ampex and the tape that he developed would be wonderful, so you could do a fishing morning and a show in the afternoon from Hayden Lake, Idaho, or wherever he was. And that's what happened.
We're talking about what a sweet party this is, a salute to Bing Crosby that's running from today.
Tomorrow, the 20th
through Tuesday the 26th at Lincoln Center at the Walter Reed. And with me are Catherine Crosby and Martin McQuaid. Martin, by the way, will be doing an event tonight as well at the Triad Theater. This is the Bing Crosby songbook you'll be singing. Do you sing croon like Bing?
No, I wouldn't even dare. But I will wrap my tonsils around some of the chestnuts which Bing is identified with.
He is also credited with developing a singing style that influenced a wide range of people. I even know of a gospel singer named Robert Anderson who said that he was his strongest influence.
Yes, yes. It's wonderful that all you have to have is perfect diction and a pleasing baritone voice and a desire to tell a story. And Bing had that.
Is that how he wound up in the movies? Because it is a far cry from singing with Paul Whiteman to getting a role in the films.
Well, there's an honesty in everything he did, and I think that was imbued in him from the Jesuits. And he's very, very honest and candid in everything he did, whether it was a song or a radio broadcast or a movie. There's a certain integrity and honesty that always comes through, I think.
Well, how long did it take for Bing to develop a recognizable screen personality?
It happens pretty quickly. I mean, in the Max Sennett shorts, he made six shorts for Max Sennett in 1930-31, and in that series of films, he plays a vagabond crooner who's always getting into mischief, who's always getting misconstrued, who has a heart of gold, but has a sort of a bad boy side, too. And as the 30s were on, that persona got more and more developed, and he became the happy-go-lucky, hail fellow, well-met guy, who you couldn't cross him, though. He had a stern will if you encountered it.
And as we saw in the Bob Hope films, he was the one who always had the sharper tongue. He was always taking advantage of poor Bob.
Poor Bob. But he said that Bob on the tee for a golf game had the better pencil and knew how to make the bets better. So he paid tribute where it was due.
Well, how much was their on-screen bantering a reflection of what went on when they were off-screen?
Well, Bing said, and Bob said too, to the writer who just wandered onto the set one day, if you hear anything you recognize, yell bingo. Because they just started doing... There was a man called a gag man, and I bet most of your people don't know what a gag man was. Well, I certainly didn't, Leonard. But he would come to Bob and say, listen, when Bing comes in, why don't you do this? And then he'd go to Bob and say, look, when Bing does this, why don't you And neither one knew what the other was going to do, and the fireworks started from there, from action. And at first the director thought, well, this can't be. I mean, it has nothing to do with the script, and Dorothy L'Amour standing there watching a tennis match, just looking back and forth, listening for something that might be her cue. It never came. But the crew was broken up, and all the actors were hysterical, so they left it in.
It was almost postmodern because they are addressing the audience throughout the whole thing. We are aware of the fact that this is real artifice. That's part of the fun of it.
Yes.
I understand that they pinned his ears back during his early films.
That's true. That's true. He said that he would look like a whippet in full flight when they glued his ears back. But when he was already in number 7 at the box office, he decided he wouldn't go through that anymore. And one day on the set, his ears popped out. And he said, this is the end of gluing my ears. And forevermore, he had the au naturel ears.
Don't you know it was awful to have that gluing your ears back? And then those hot lights, they were hard to work under anyway.
And then they wanted him to work with a toupee once his hair started thinning.
Yeah. And he resisted it, but Wally Westmore, who was a dear friend as well as head of makeup at Paramount, said, Bing, you can have a star, a romantic star with big ears, but you can't have a romantic star with big ears going bald. You just can't do it, one or the other. And so he submitted to the toupee for films.
To the end? When did you meet him?
I met him on the set of White Christmas in 1953. I'd gotten to Paramount in the fall of 52, and he was abroad doing Little Boy Lost then. But he came back, and I was under contract to Paramount, and I heard this voice saying, "Howdy, Tex, what's your hurry?" as I walked by his dressing room. And so we met. We had a cup of tea, which was my first really elegant date, with cinnamon toast. And then I watched him do some scenes from White Christmas.
What did you have a preconceived notion of what he was like? Because movie stars tend to be perceived according to the roles that we've
seen
them in.
I suppose so. But Bing was exactly what you got on the screen. He was just himself. Very comfortable, very easy to be with. You know, I did two things the first time we met. I said, do you like baseball? I did not know he owned the Pirates. I said, do you like horses? Because on his wall there were a lot of horses. I did not know he built Del Mar, and he said, yeah, I like them a little bit.
He owned more bad horses than probably any horse owner ever.
Absolutely, absolutely. I guess maybe I had not been a fan, quote, and in quote, and he thought that was kind of amusing to know somebody who was completely innocent. And then when we were married, he loved taking me places he had been. It gave him a new set of eyes to see things with.
Many people may not remember that he was a very successful businessman. The horse races may not have done well for him, although
he sort of broke even, and that's a huge success in horse racing, if you break even.
But Minute Maid Orange Juice, suddenly in thinking about this, I remembered all those commercials he did for Minute Maid. He owned Minute Maid, didn't he?
At one time. Mm-hmm. At one time. That was early on. Sadly, when he took advice from his business people, usually he sold something that was priceless later. But that's all right. He did very well. And unlike a lot of big stars in Hollywood, he didn't put all of his money in one basket and lose it all. And that's nice. He did some production, and those were not too successful. But he really loved doing what he did. He loved singing, and he loved acting. And he did both of those things very well.
Let's take a little break, and we will come back later with more. My guests are Catherine Crosby and Martin McQuaid. We're talking about Bing Crosby, who's the subject of a 14-film retrospective at the Walter Reed Theater at the Film Society of Lincoln Center. And let's listen to a little bit of Bing.
I'm an old cowhand from the Rio Grande, but my legs ain't bowed and my cheeks ain't tan. I'm a cowboy who never saw a cow, never roped to steer, cause I don't know how. Sure ain't a fixin' to start him now. Oh,
yippee-i-yo-ki-yay. yippee-i-yo,
kye. I'm an old cowhand and I come down from the Rio Grande. And I learned to ride, 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 for I learned to stand. I'm a riding fool who is up to date. I know every trail in the Lone Star State, cause I ride the range in the Ford V8. Oh, yippee-i-yo-kye,
yippee-i-yo-kye.
After you've gone and left me crying, after you've gone, there's no denying, you'll feel blue, you'll feel sad, you'll miss the dearest pal you've ever had. There'll come a time, now don't forget it, there'll come a time when you'll regret it. Someday, when you grow lonely, your heart will break like mine, you'll want me only. After you've gone away.
I'm Leonard Lopik. Welcome back to my show. We're listening to Bing Crosby showing us just what a fine jazz singer he was. He also was one of our leading actors, and the Lincoln Center Films, the Film Society of Lincoln Center, is presenting the first retrospective in the United States of 14 of his films, including a premiere, and we'll get to that in just a moment, under the title What a Swell Party This Is. It begins tomorrow and runs through the 26th. And for more information, you can give them a call at 212-875-5600 or visit www.filmlinklinc.com. With us are Catherine Crosby and Crosby historian Martin McQuaid. And listening to him sing, it's not surprising that he was a singer first. That's what led to everything else.
Yes.
And he did have one of the greatest hits in the history of all of American show business, White Christmas. Did he sing around the house? Did he like those songs?
Oh, he loved everything. He loved everything with music and with words that were poetic. There's some songs he liked better than others, but White Christmas, I just did a show that might come to Broadway one day, that states that White Christmas is the biggest selling record of all times. And that's true.
Well, that was before we had CDs and the kinds of sales that a Michael Jackson might have had. It's still selling, White Christmas? Is that
every
why?
Every Christmas. How can you have Christmas without White Christmas?
And did he, well, he must have loved Irving Berlin because Berlin gave him so many of his best songs.
They were very good friends.
But what about the dramas? We think of him as a guy who could do wonderful light comedy, and then suddenly we have movies like The Country Girl.
Yes.
Had he wanted to do that kind of thing?
Yes, he did. He had great faith in Perlberg and Seton. Seton wrote the script for Country Girl, and I remember I was a Cub reporter along with being a starlet at that time, and I went on the set of Country Girl to interview him. And the gag man, Barney Dean, that I told you about a while ago, came up and said, "Not a lot of laughs around here."
And he was upset about that.
Yes, he really was. There was no way to put a joke over.
But did it come across as a grueling experience for him, something that, because it was so atypical for him?
Well, he had those elements in him.
And talk to me a bit about the premiere that we're going to see. This is a TV show that has not been available all these years?
Well, it's called High Tour, and it was one of the very first specials that Bing performed on television. And it was aired in 1956 as part of the Ford Star Jubilee. And Bing thought that it could be shown as a feature film, and changed it somewhat, re-edited it for release as a feature film, but it was never shown theatrically. It lay dormant in Mrs. Crosby's archive now for the last 50 years, and she graciously provided the Film Society with a 35-millimeter print of it, and it will get its world premiere on Sunday at the Film Society.
How come you haven't made this available before, Catherine?
There was not the right opportunity. The Lincoln Center is pretty special. The people there are very special. They take good care of your materials, and they show them in a wonderful way. I don't know how anybody can resist going in the morning to the Lincoln Center, getting a lot of popcorn, mm-hmm. which they also sell, and just sitting there all day long. I mean, you have four movies a day. Each of the movies will be shown twice, which is good. But when you have not only high society, but you've got Going Hollywood and Country Girl and Sing You Sinners, which I've never seen, Pennies from Heaven, Blue Skies, Robin and the Seven Hood, Anything Goes, and there's a special part with, what's her name?
Ethel Merman.
Singing like a 20-minute song right at the beginning. Mm. And then they go into the print that they have, High Time, which Blake Edwards directed. And it has Bing and Drag with a Southern Belle's costume on. I was there the evening that he did that scene, and it was hysterical. He had his picture on the front page of the Los Angeles Times, and I delivered it to his mother. And she looked at the big picture on the front page and said, I think I know that woman. Bing looked exactly like his mother. Road to Zanzibar, the Bob Hope wonder, and Going My Way, which is so beautiful. And then High Tor, Rhythm on the River, and The Emperor's Waltz, which was very difficult to get. Martin really did a lot of work to get that and get it on the program. I'm so pleased. But one of my favorites is Rhythm on the River. Bing really did play the drums very well. And I know he'd said he played the drums and the spoons, but I didn't think much of it until I saw this movie. When
He never practiced?
Well, not around the house, no.
Well, he drummed in the Rhythm Boys.
Uh-huh.
He would play the cymbals and the drums when he was in the Rhythm Boys. So he had the prowess.
Once they gave him a violin, but they had to put on rubber strings because he kept trying to play the instrument. It used to be the fashion for somebody to be in the band and then just get up and sing as if everybody in the band could do that. Well, Bing had to have an instrument, but they tried a bassoon. No, he mm-hmm. could make that work. And all kinds of things. But they finally wound up having him backstage ringing the bells in the 1912 overture. And he and somebody else, probably Al Rinker, broke the bell. Mm-hmm. And the stage manager said, how far do you want to go with these guys? They've already broken the bell. Now, what do you want to do? But he was kind of wonderful on that. In Rhythm on the River, they did a song and a dance, and everybody played. Lovely. And Mary Martin, of course, is gorgeous.
Let's talk a bit about High Tor, because this is an all-star production that's not been available since it was shown in another version on television, but written by Maxwell Anderson,
yes.
Music composed by Arthur Schwartz, and it features Julie Andrews, who must have been about 21 years old.
12, I think.
It's her film debut. I think she was rehearsing My Fair Lady while High Tor was in production. And Nancy Olson, who had been in a movie with Bing in 1950, is the other female lead. And it's a wonderfully modest, very mystical kind of plot. It's about a haunted mountain. And it really depicts Bing at a point in his career when he was really getting into the dramatic aspect of his talent. And he had just won the third Oscar nomination for The Country Girl. And the year after that, he did another dramatic role in Man on Fire. So you see him really delving into his dramatic forte in High Tor.
Is this something that he ever took any lessons for, or is just as he worked over those years, he developed more and more knowledge of just what it meant to be an actor?
Well, to be a film actor is different from being a band singer. Mm-hmm. What he learned...
Although you have to be comfortable in front of people in any case.
What I saw in the films that I watched him do was that he gradually got more still. His movements were subtle. You get so that you can just move an eye or think, and it comes across. He was the best at it.
You're introducing The Road to Zanzibar, aren't you, Martin?
That's right.
And we talked about how postmodern some of those films come across.
Oh,
you
absolutely.
Really do get the feeling that Bing and Bob had wonderful chemistry. Is that the reason they kept on making those movies? How far back did their friendship go?
Well, actually, in The Road to Zanzibar, you see a recreation of the vaudeville routine that they did 9 years earlier at the Capitol Theater. Typical vaudeville shtick, but they do it so effortlessly in that. And The Road to Zanzibar was the second Road film. In fact, they were planning to do an eighth when Bing right before Bing died, they had signed a contract to do an eighth one, The Road to the Fountain of Youth. But their rapport, really, they let you in on the joke. And they made you know that they knew that you were watching two titanic stars having a fun time.
In Rhythm on the Range, Bing introduced the song, I'm Heading for the Last Roundup. That, I think, brought country music or country and western music to mainstream audiences. But he only appeared in a few westerns. What, Mississippi, and then later a remake of Stagecoach.
Well, yes.
Did he not like them? Did he? After all, he loved horses.
Oh, he did. He loved them. But he was doing awfully well with what he did. And chemistry has a lot to do with it. He worked with Hopalong Cassidy when he was very big, and Roy Rogers he had in his movies. But that was their specialty.
And then he also worked with David Bowie later in his life in a Christmas special. What were his feelings about rock and roll?
Oh, David was on our last Christmas show in 1977. Do you realize that song, which has also become standard, The Drummer Boy and Peace on Earth as a duet, David said to our director, I don't sing in his range. What will I do? And Bing overheard it and said, oh, David, you just sing your song. I'll get in there somewhere. So David carried most of the melody, and Bing got in with the harmony, which he loved to do. You know, the Kraft Music Hall, which Bing hosted for 25 years, had him singing duets with everybody under the sun. And his guests ranged from Charlie Appin to McCormick to Jolson. It just went on. There was no one who wasn't on his show. And he loved to sing with people. But David Bowie, people were wondering how he would appear. He had been known to wear a skirt to auditions.
Yeah.
And David came in a very reserved suit, and they talked about their children. His and mine were there. But they became very good friends, and David was dear to work with.
How much control did he have over all of his projects? Did he tend to originate the films and the television shows?
The television specials he produced, and he had total control. Occasionally he got caught up. There was a show that had one wonderful dancer with cleavage that went down to her navel, and he didn't see that costume until it was too late to redo it. He was terribly upset. His standards were very strict because of his mother. If his mother wouldn't like it, he shouldn't do it. And he lived by that, and she died at 104, so...
But the dancer is still with us.
The dancer is still with us, cleavage or not.
And meanwhile, we have this series at the Walter Reed Theater, the Film Society of Lincoln Center, presenting the first retrospective in the United States of 14 of how many films altogether? Do we know?
About 55 or 60 feature films. And then when you count in the cameos and the guest spots, it gets even larger.
And how many of the really early ones are there?
We have one. The earliest one is Going Hollywood, which Bing stars with Marion Davies in, and Temptation comes from that. That's the earliest one. And there's going to be a Max Sennett short on the same bill as that.
The story of that movie, he just loved to tell how Marion was one of the silent stars, and then she went in to sound very nicely. Her little stutter made it adorable.
She was a great comedian, but most people remember her as her mistress and nothing else.
Well, that added a lot of spice there. But there was a band on the set, an orchestra, about a 5-piece string orchestra, and Bing said, we never got a shot before noon. Then we had a long lunch.
They would break for Rhine wines and long, languishing lunches.
It was just lovely. That was the longest production schedule he ever had, I'm sure. Hearst kept coming by, though, to see what progress was being made, and the answer was very little.
Thank you both so much for being with us, Catherine Crosby and Martin McQuaid. There's a series at the Film Society of Lincoln Center at the Walter Reed Theater. 14 of Bing Crosby's films being called What a Swell Party This Is, and it runs through Tuesday the 26th. For more information, you can give them a call at 212-875-5600 or visit www.filmlinc.com. Thank you both so much.
I do hope you'll join us for the party.
Let's listen to a little Bing.
I'll tell you why I can't find you. Every time I go out to your place, you gone fishing.
Ah, you know.
Well, there's a sign upon your door.
Uh-huh.
Gone fishing.
I'm real gone, man.
You ain't working anymore.
Could be.
There's your hoe out in the sun, where you left a row half done. You claim that hoeing ain't no fun,
but I can prove it.
You ain't got no ambition. Gone fishing by a shady, weighty pool.
Shangri-La, really la.
I'm wishing I could be that kind of fool.
Shall I twist your arm?
I'd say no more work for mine.
Welcome to the club.
On my door I'd hang a sign. Gone fishing instead of just a wishing.
Papa Bing, I've stopped by your place a time or two lately, and you aren't home either.
Well, I'm a busy man, Louie. I got a lot of big deals cooking. I was probably tied up at the studio.
You aren't tied up, you dog. You was just playing.